drawing near. Brothers, sisters, please get ready.
Welcome. You're listening to Bending the Arc on KKRN, community-supported radio out of Round Mountain and Bella Vista, California. Bending the Arc, as you know, is a show dedicated to speaking with people who are working for equal justice in Shasta County. It's sponsored by the Shasta Equal Justice Coalition. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with two people deeply connected to the Step Up program at Shasta College. And we'll be talking a little bit about the program, some of the outcomes, everything that you might want to know about Step Up. So we'll begin with introductions. And Robert, you are the director of the Step Up program operating out of Shasta College. Before we get into it, can you tell us a little bit about your role and when you became involved with Step Up?
So I oversee the Step Up program here at Shasta College. Step Up is part of the California Chancellor's Office for Community Colleges Rising Scholars Network. I joined as the program director in 2016, so I'm just passing my seventh year at the college and as head of this program. I'm a little dual-hatted at the moment because I'm also the co-program director with Kelly Nadler, the Rising Scholars Program of the North Far North Restorative Justice Regional Consortium. And North Far North is a collaborative of a number of community colleges in Northern part of California that work with restorative justice and justice-involved students and that sort of thing.
Okay. Thank you. And Dana, you're here today because you're a graduate of Step Up. So if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're involved in these days. It sounds like finals is one of those things.
Yeah.
Whatever else you'd like to share.
Thank you, Sharon. My name is Dana Jackson. I graduated the Step Up program in 2021. I was in it for just a couple of semesters because I had already done a lot of education before that. But I still am involved today. I just went to the graduation. I have shared my story in the meetings and been in the newsletter. And I still talk with Robert and Nick Hitchco all the time. I am currently not working. And so I am in my master's program for marriage and family therapy, with a focus on professional clinical counseling. And I attend Touro University worldwide, so it's all online. And I'll be probably graduating that program at the end of next year. Mm-hmm. And so just focusing on that. And I, since I'm not working right now, I have taken up a lot of hobbies. And so that's what I'm really into right now. I have like six aquariums in my house now.
Wow. Well, yeah. And one could argue that a graduate program is a lot of work.
Surprisingly, it is a lot of work, but it's not as much work as when I was taking 19 units at Shasta College. So all the classes are fairly similar. You already know a lot of the information. It's just finding the research to back it up. That's the most challenging part.
Yes. Thank you for that. And this question is for both of you. Either one of you can start. What drew you initially to the program as director, as a participant? What made you be interested in becoming involved?
I'll go ahead and go first. Ladies first over here. I was in probation one day and I saw different flyers that were up. And so I was interested in it and I was in sober living at the time and someone I was in sober living with was in the Step Up program. And so she had shared with me all the different things that happen and how they help, in which previously when I had gone to school, I was doing it pretty much on my own. And then I had my daughter and I just it was too many irons in the fire and I couldn't juggle it all. And so being fearful of that happening again, I was looking for more support. And so, and plus, you know, getting back into society with felonies, I needed to do everything that I possibly could to kind of counteract those felonies. And so whatever programs that I could have gotten into, I tried to get into. And so I was drawn into it by the extra support, having friends that were in it, and which I'm really grateful that I would have gone back to school with or without the Step Up program because I needed it. Mm-hmm. But I'm really grateful because if it wasn't for Misty, I would have dropped out of the statistics class that I was taking because I was so scared I was going to fail. Mm. And because of her encouragement, she told me to just hold on, keep just holding on, just keep trying your best, reach out to your teacher, get some help. And I was able to pass the class, you know, and so I didn't prematurely drop it and I didn't fail. And, another thing that helped a lot was that I was working very minimal part-time. And so during COVID, they were giving us food boxes. And so, you know, it's things like that that help a lot. I was able to sign up for a Christmas program for my kids and get presents for them. You know, I couldn't afford to do that stuff. And so it really, they made it to where it was a lot more reasonable and they paid for all my books. I remember my first semester of school, I like back in the day, I paid $1,000 out of pocket and half of that was books, you know? And so having the help to be able to buy the books was crucial. And Nick Hitchco and Robert and Misty are like cheerleaders. I've never had people be so optimistic, so encouraging. And, you know, like they didn't even know me, but they're like, yes, you've got this. You're going to do it. That's amazing. I love your plan. Keep going. You know, and my family's like, are you sure you want to do that? You know, so they didn't question anything. And so that's what really drew me to it. And that's what I try to motivate and encourage people to join all the time. Cause it's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And
I don't even know how to follow that. I mean, that's students like Dana are the reason that I love doing what I do. I love our program, our community, and it's just such a joy to come to work every day and be able to change lives. So I think for me, I was drawn to the program initially because I'm a Shasta College alum myself. Been in the community for a long time, transplanted Sacramento suburban. And, but I think for me, I had some justice impact in my background. I've had family members that dealt with the carceral system and things like that. So I had a heart for that. I experienced addiction. And I think that it was just kind of a perfect fit. It was, in terms of when I got here, it was just a commitment from the administration, our board of trustees and our staff and our faculty that we can give our students a second chance at a first-class life.
So beginning with you, Robert, how do you typically describe the program to people who are unfamiliar with Step Up? Tell us a little bit about what it does, for whom, all of those things.
Okay, so Step Up is a partnership between Shasta College and a number of community partners, as well as some national organizations. So it's really truly, like I mentioned earlier, a little bit of a collaborative effort. Our partners range from the Good News Rescue Mission to the Smart Business Center and the Job Training Center down in Red Bluff to Tehama, Trinity, and Shasta Probation Sheriff Department. Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, Adult Parole Unit, Newton County Office of Education. So right now we have about 24 partners that assist us and support us from kind of the whole spectrum, public, nonprofit, everything in between. I think the one thing that I would want to stress to people that are listening and were unfamiliar with Step Up and dealing with formerly incarcerated students is that they're just that, formerly incarcerated, and our students are amazing. They're resilient. They really have a passion for learning and changing their lives. I have students who are actively on probation, parole. I have some students that haven't been in trouble in 20, 30 years, and kind of, again, everything in between. Programs like ours are vital for a number of reasons. First, we work with students to kind of change their circumstances and their way of thinking and providing support so that they can overcome some of those educational barriers, whether it's housing or food insecurity, whether it's addiction, whether it's trauma from prior abuse. Second, I think that Step Up makes our community more vibrant by working with individuals to produce sober, respectful, trained, and at least better members of the community that will go out there and contribute to our society, and they already are in a number of ways. I will say that it's reducing recidivism is important. That cycle, I do think that we are able to kind of lower the rank of reoffending in our community. We've kind of proven that over the 7 years that I've been in the program. But I also think that changing lives is the greatest thing. It's tough to measure our program in GPA because we have some students that have come in and stabilized themselves in their lives and dealt with their addiction and are now working and, raising their families and reunited with their children. And so it's just an all-around benefit to the community.
Thanks. And Dana, you spoke to some of the specific kind of supports and resources that you received. How do you explain the whole program and its importance to others who are unfamiliar with it?
Yeah, I've encountered the scenario in a lot of different ways. I've encountered people that are fresh out of program or they're fresh out of prison, and either they've never had a job and they've never been to school, and they've considered it, the cycle of change is starting to happen, but it's such an unknown, area that they're scared, and so when I talk to them about it, of course I'm super passionate about it. So, I'm very, I'm just very energetic about it. And so, I tell them that you don't have to currently be on probation or parole. It doesn't even have to be probation or parole from this area. You could have been on it from somewhere else and still be able to receive the help. And the greatest thing, I tell them that the greatest thing is, not just that they'll, help you with the cost of things and stuff. They'll help you with the application, because lots of people have the hardest time with just the application. That alone seems so intimidating. And if they can't do the application, then they have no hope to even do schoolwork. And so lots of times I'll help them to do their application, or I will point them in the direction of who they can get help from, because I also don't want to be the person that's doing everything for them. But I talk about the biggest, most important part is that you have a community of people. You have this community of support, because you come from, prison or jail, and you have that community too. And you find people with like minds. You go to rehab programs or sober living, you're in another place with like-minded people. And you take it a step further and you get into Step Up, and now you realize that you're not the only criminal that's going and pursuing a career, and that there is actually an optimistic outlook for you, because if all these other people have done it, then you could do it too. And so having that support and meeting those people, and you start to see them in meetings, you start to see them in the community, you start to see them at places where they work or where you work, and you become friends and you become connected. And the whole sense of knowing that you're not an outcast and you're not alone is probably one of the most important aspects.
And you're pointing to something that for those of us who teach or serve in the community college system, and that support and community, you're talking about high expectations with high support, having things modeled for you. That's important for so many of our students. And what you said about having those additional challenges that you're facing, making all of those things even more important.
Yes, correct. Yeah, because for someone in my position, when I look at Robert, I don't see someone who used to have a history. And lots of times when people look at me, they don't see someone who used to have a history. And so it's nice to see people that you can identify with, whatever level that's on. And so you could find people who have been nurses, that have been, you know, therapists, that have been drug and alcohol counselors, all these people who have gone back into the system, and you get to find people that are your people. And so it makes it a lot easier to move forward, and you're not going to be stuck working at like Taco Bell or AMPM for the rest of your life. Like, there's hope for being able to provide for your family and to be able to pay off your fines and to be able to step away from that. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, the biggest part.
On this program, we've often talked about the many challenges that face people when they're transitioning out of probation or incarceration. And I wanted to ask both of you, what is important for people listening to understand about both the needs of students who are in this program and in this situation, and the strengths that they bring to such a program?
I think the first thing that people need to know is that there's a great deal of misinformation out there, a lot of prejudice, a lot of stereotypes, a lot of negativity that's going on in social media and our society, and things that people have pre-assumptions about. You know, the students in our program, justice-involved students. So virtually every student who has been now in the past, or more than likely will be in the future, has been a victim at some point of their life, whether it's neglect, abuse, poor role model, addiction, all of the above. You know, and so there's a lot of mental health issues, which is kind of endemic to our society as a whole right now, that people try to self-medicate with, people try to deal with that on their own, out of shame or what have you. I think the most important thing to know is that a majority of our students are in our community now and doing amazing things. They're your neighbors, coworkers, volunteers, sitting next to you in church, you know. And given this new lease on life, not only benefits them and their families, we've seen countless students who have been reunited with their children, and their kids are thriving, and they, you know, are making good choices in very solid, healthy relationships now. But it also greatly that support and that relief and that nurturing and mentorship, and kind of the sense of we're in this together. We don't judge, because one of the things I always like to try to say is that I don't really care what's in their rearview mirror. I'm looking at their windshield going forward. So I don't try to look backwards. We don't judge. We're here to support them. And as far as the community is concerned, I mean, just from a fiscal standpoint, this makes a lot more sense, because it takes a lot less of your tax dollars to educate someone than to keep them incarcerated. Right now in our county, it's about $150 a day to incarcerate someone. And we can educate them at the college and train them for a new career, be it vocational, technical, academic, for far less than that, and give them that lease on life and give them that sense of accomplishment and resilience, knowing that they took advantage of pursuing their dream. But in the end, we're just helping them along the way. It's the students that invest the time and the effort to, you know, get that education and to, you know, log into those classes and show up in the evenings and that sort of thing. So I think that's the biggest thing is knowing that, you know, there are good people that just have made bad choices in the past or have been kind of victims of circumstance themselves and are now decided they're going to take that next step and kind of reinvent themselves and be, you know, productive. I mean, we have tons of stories of excellent students like Dana that I can share, you know, all across the state, all across the country.
Yeah, and I will circle back with some of those results. And it also strikes me that what you just articulated is one of the reasons that you've gotten support over the years from the Community Corrections Partnership for that kind of work.
Yeah, we received a lot of support. Obviously, one of our earlier original partners was Shasta County Probation, and we received funding through the Community Corrections. Tracy and has been super solid. We received support through Chief Mitch at Tehama, as well as Ruby Fierro up in Trinity, and now we're also giving support through the Adult Parole Unit. They have their community-based coalition, which is very similar to the DRC and its goal of trying to, change patterns of behavior and give people some tools for job seeking, things like that. But that's something that's funded through the Butte County Office of Education. So we've kind of expanded our partnership over there. So, I mean, there's a lot of attention at the state and national level right now invested in trying to make these kind of programs successful because they do realize that it's more advantageous for us as a society and more fiscally responsible to educate, train, nurture than it is to reincarcerate.
And Dana, what would you say is important for people to understand about the needs and strengths of students in this program and how the success of students in the program impacts the community?
Well, you know, this program and programs like this one that help people transition from probation or incarceration is that it, you know, it helps them take their transferable skills from being on the streets, from committing crimes, from using substances. I mean, people who have committed crimes, especially if they're repeat offenders, and people who are, you know, struggling with substance dependence, those are some of the most determined people I've ever met in my life. Because, you know, they're going to keep going, and those skills are still transferable, even if they've never had a job. Those skills are transferable. And because they have, you know, committed crimes and they have a criminal history, that already puts them beneath the social standards or social expectations of the community. They're trying to prove themselves, you know, and they're going to prove themselves, and they want to make themselves proud, and they want to make their family members proud. So they're going to be some of the hardest working people that you could hire, you know, and all they need is some encouragement and some motivation. Because, you know what, just like everybody else, they're trying to put food on the table, they're trying to keep a roof over their head, and they're trying to move forward in life. Because right now, at this time in their life, I can guarantee it's either the first time or it's one of the first times that they've ever experienced this in their life. So everything's new. Everything is new. Because even if they had a job before, they were most likely still using substances. You know, we didn't have good coping skills. No one taught us good coping skills. The majority of the people that I know that are substance dependent, they get there because they're people pleasing and codependent, and they don't know that that's even a thing. They don't know even what that is. Mm-hmm. And they get so tired running themselves into the ground to make everybody else happy because they think that that gives them value, that they burn out and they have no coping skills. And the majority or a lot of them already, you know, like Robert said, are already a victim or have experienced trauma. And so all of these things put together, like, you just get to a point where you throw in your white flag. And all it takes is someone to believe in them. Mm. You know, my first boss that I had, I worked at Living Hope Compassion Ministries. He was one of the only places that I knew or that I'd wanted to work at because I wanted to keep my strong spiritual beliefs. And he was the best boss I've had. Instead of, you know, like, you need to do this and you need to do that, you're not doing this right, he would come and just have a conversation with me. And we would laugh about things. And he would set the bar higher and higher every week, you know, because he saw my potential and he worked with me, you know. And it's not very often that you come across people that are like that. Nonetheless, is it very often that you come across people that are willing to hire felons?
Mm-hmm. And when you were talking, I just wanted to clarify for listeners, the transferable skills, you're talking about all the skills that one has to learn and develop in recovery, or is that correct?
Even on the streets, you learn a lot of skills, cash handling, scheduling, sales, you know, marketing. You learn all of these different things. And people don't really realize it, but that's a lot of skills that they trained themselves to do. No one else really taught them that stuff. They had to figure it out for themselves, you know, because their competition ain't going to teach them. Yeah. But, you know, these are a lot of things that people don't realize. And so people that are coming back, you know, into society from the criminal justice system, they have a lot of value, and a lot of people don't see their value. They don't even see their value.
Some of those skills that were learned while they're incarcerated. I mean, everything from woodworking to, you know, machining to welding, you know, art, law library, all these sorts of things are things that we look at and try to transfer the skills they've learned into practical applications here. So I think that it certainly has a lot of value of just kind of taking the same issue and just spinning it 180 and looking at it from a different perspective. You know, breeds a lot of positivity.
Yeah, so being able to reframe, it sounds like recognizing that skill and ability that you can now transfer and apply to a new situation rather than feeling like it's all new.
Instead of feeling like it's all new, or it's all bad skills.
Mm.
So if you've been in trouble for doing these things, you're automatically going to correlate those skills as bad skills, and you're not going to think that you have any skills.
Mm.
You know? And so you could just apply them in a different situation, and you have a lot of skills.
And we spoke earlier about some of the program results and the different ways that all programs really measure success. So I'm wondering, Robert, if you could start us off with the program results, your outcomes, those things that you go to your partners and share, and then from both of you, some specific stories we can share with listeners about impact.
Sure. I won't dive too deeply into the data because, one, I'm horrible at math, and two, I don't want to lull your audience into an early afternoon nap. I can say that the first thing I want to touch on is, as I mentioned earlier, our recidivism rate. Right now, the recidivism rate in California is about 46%. 46% of people that are released from state prison or county jail will reoffend at some point in the next 5 years. The national average is about 44, and it's hovered as high as 60. Step Up's recidivism rate overall is 16.5. It's 16.57. And for graduates of the program, people that actually get certificates, degrees, and move on, it's 8.98. I don't know that I need to say anything else. You know, our students are changing their lives. They're becoming productive members of the community. When we had our institutional effectiveness department look at what our overall outcomes were in comparison to the college as a whole, we did pretty well. As on average, 7-year average, our GPA is about 2.8. It's hovered well over 3 for most of them. And then, of course, you got through COVID in there, which kind of makes everything kind of wonky. The percentage of students who's earned Dean's List honors, which is 3.5 or higher, is 36%. Both of these are higher than the average for the college as a whole. So our students are doing some awesome things. Our overall employment rate for graduates is around 78.53. You know, again, I touched on our reoffending numbers. So I do think the other thing I want to point out is the fact that, as I said, just as a lot of problems don't stop when you reach our front gate or our lighted sign out front, students bring that stuff onto campus with them: food insecurity, housing insecurity, transportation, you know, those sorts of things, trying to juggle between the requirements of being full-time parents and full-time students and full-time employee. And at the same time, they've got, you know, their supervision conditions, you know, sobriety class is another thing that they have to do to adhere to their release conditions. That's a lot to put on someone's plate, and they do it really well through awesome time management and sometimes a lack of sleep, and but just a lot of resilience. And so I think that that's one of the things I can really say. The other thing I'll say in terms of non-statistical outcomes is just the number of people in our community that are working everywhere, from Inhoven to Visions of the Cross to here at Shasta College, as counselors in the community. You know, these are students that I run into at Costco, like I happened on Saturday when I was last minute Mother's Day shopping for flowers. I run into our students, and that's the biggest reward for me, and the most satisfaction that I take is when I run into a student and, hey, Steve, how are you doing? I'm doing great. I'm, you know, got my kids back. I just bought a house. And those kind of things aren't things that you can measure in GPA. So we measure them kind of lives changed. I always say if I'm doing my job right, at some point I will work myself out of employment because the justice system will be empty. I mean, that's the goal, which is kind of counterintuitive. But those are the kind of quality students that we're getting. And that is a testament to our partnership. She had talked about Nick Hitchco, who's our liaison with Shasta County Probation. The fact that we regularly meet with our partners, that we, you know, work with our students from the time they're referred, you know, providing basic needs support to them, whether it's, you know, in the form of from our food pantry, or maybe they need bus passes, or, you know, anything in between, you know, helping them out with an electric bill. All that stuff allows students to focus on what's important, which is getting their pursuits accomplished. And so overall, I'm pretty proud of our program. We've been, you know, recognized locally, state level, and we've been recognized nationally as well, you know, for the quality of our staff and our students.
Mm. So. And Dane, I wonder if you have encountered any specific stories that speak to the power of the program and the support?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I, like I said previously, I've come across a lot of people who don't think that they're smart enough to go to school. They don't think that they have the time. They don't think that they have the energy. And they just don't have any hope within themselves. And so the biggest thing that I see is an intrinsic change. they gain more confidence in themselves. You know, it's just like making your bed in the morning. You accomplished one goal. Well, you did that. And then you also took a shower and then you made dinner and then you went and you did one assignment, you know, and like Robert said previously, there's a lot of people that have undiagnosed mental health conditions. You're like, I didn't know until I got into recovery that I'm autistic and I have ADHD. I have obsessive compulsive personality disorder. I have depression. Like I have all of these things, PTSD. And, you know, before I used to think like, God, there must be something wrong with me because I'm the only person that can't get it together. I'm the only person that can't do this. Like, what is wrong with me? And now I know. And now I know, and not that it makes anything easier, you know, trying to be a student and having severe ADHD is the most challenging thing I think I've ever done. But you get to learn more about yourself and you get to appreciate yourself and, you know, find, I think that one of the greatest accomplishments is when the people value themselves more. You know, like they see their value, you know, like I got to a point to where I was starting to decide what I was willing to do for a job. I'm not going to take any pay less than this. I'm not going to work these days. I know I'm worth this pay. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm worth receiving benefits from my family. I'm worth having a retirement. And I know I'm not the only one that has experienced that. I have a lot of friends that are in Step Up that have, you know, increased their value because they realize how much hard work it takes, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not like it is for the typical, you know, community member. We're digging ourselves not out of just a 6-foot hole, but a 10-foot hole. You know, like I was laid off of Hill Country in February. And they hired me because of my experience, my personal experience. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking like, cool. Oh my gosh. I've never experienced my criminal background and my, you know, drug dependence being used to the benefit. Like I didn't have to be scared. Mm-hmm. Well, after getting laid off, now I can't get a job in the community in that field because of my criminal history. So although it's been over 4 years, it's been 6 years since I've committed any crimes. Those things are still following me around, but like, I still value myself. Mm-hmm. I'm still not going to take a lesser paying job and I'm still not going to work a schedule that doesn't work for me because I still have my value regardless if they see it or not. And a lot of the people in the program have learned that skill. And I think that that's one of the most important things.
One of the things I'll follow up on what Dana was saying was that our support doesn't stop after they graduate. And, you know, while commencement is amazing, it's just the next step of the journey. So we really try to do things in terms of employability skills. We have partner with our community ed and offer, you know, road flagger certification. We've got fire line safety certification training. We partner with a nonprofit legal firm called the Access Project between us and Rising Scholars. It does post-conviction relief, expungements, certificates of rehabilitation, things like that. Just because it's part of that whole process of kind of bringing someone, you know, a full 360 to back to a place of stability and kind of where they were when they, you know, better than when they started. So there's a number of different things we continue. So,
and you spoke earlier about partnerships and how key they are. And to be honest, everyone that's on the show really acknowledges the power of partnerships for programs and for individuals. I'm wondering if you both can speak to what has made those partnerships strong and helpful, what you have learned about what's important in terms of nurturing those partnerships.
I guess I'll tackle this one first. Well, from our standpoint, partnerships are everything. We rely on our partners for direction and purpose and support. And, you know, again, our partners are a large part of working with our students. You know, perfect examples, I had a student in crisis, I'd be able to pick up the phone, talk with Nick, try it, and then we were able to kind of get them into counseling and things like that. You know, if I have students that I believe that are struggling, either emotionally or struggling to stay with their sobriety, that's all stuff that we constantly communicate with our partners about so that we can provide that support and that concern, so that students know that it's not really about spying on them, it's more looking out for them and taking that journey alongside of them as important as, you know, opposed to pushing or pulling. We started out with, you know, five partners, you know, eight years ago, and now we're close to 24. And that's everything from Health and Human Services, like I said earlier, to the Rescue Mission, to Rising Scholars now. At the state level, we partner with Chico State and their Rebound Scholars in Cal Poly Humboldt. Partnerships are super important, not just for us, but to provide resources for our students. I mentioned BCOE, CCP have provided, you know, a lot of financial support for us. Rising Scholars has provided some financial support to pay for, you know, everything from books and everything we pass on to the students, because we're grant funded, is provided by the generosity of our community and those that believe in the power of restorative justice and that we can make a change. So without our partnerships and having that regular sense of communication and working with them, I highly doubt that we would have the level of success that we've had without that team behind us. And our partnerships even go to our alumni. I mean, I've had folks, Dana's went to the Community Corrections Executive Committee and spoke. I've taken students to the National Conference of Higher Education and Prison to speak there, you know, Rotary, things like that, because our biggest testament to our success are our students. So I think that's the key part of the kind of that whole partnership that sometimes maybe overlooked, but it's pretty vital.
Mm. And when we look at partnerships in the, you know, Shasta Equal Justice Coalition, we're also looking at partnerships for people who are working for equal justice and criminal legal system reform. I know that programs like Step Up often focus on individual accountability and responsibility and what people as individuals can do moving forward to be well and happy and safe and all of those things. But I'm wondering how you two view equal justice and criminal legal system reform from your vantage point.
You know, the thing that I wish the most is that, you know, because when I was younger, I was pretty naive and I didn't really understand the extent of racism in our community. And, you know, I actually, when I was in high school, I was, my ROP class was Administration of Justice, Criminal Justice. And I was an explorer. I volunteered for the police department. I went on a ride-along. And, you know, one of the first people that they pulled over was a Black male pedestrian. And they said that he littered his cellophane. And it was dark. Like, you can't see that. It was on, you know, the Churn Creek area. I'm sure that there's 1,000 other people that are doing worse than littering cellophane, you know, and he said that his dad had just been pulled over 2 hours before that. And so, you know, that's when I started noticing it. And then, you know, once I was on the streets, I really started to see it. And there's some people, and I experienced it on my own too, is that, you know, some people get harsher consequences than other people, and it's not really, that's not really the justice system, you know, or like some people are offered the AOP program, the Addicted Offenders Program, or behavioral health court, and some people are not, you know, and what determines that? I wasn't offered those programs. I was offered, you know, a rehabilitation program, but that was like pulling teeth. They weren't going to allow me to do that, you know? And so I do like that it's becoming more, more acceptable to try and send people to programs and to do the, you know, justice reform and all that stuff. I think that a big part of it or a big contributing factor is that we just don't have enough programs here. And they're not partners with enough programs in other areas either. Mm. And so that is the one thing that I do wish is I wish that there was more programs that were available, either connected through Beacon Health Options, through partnership, or more places that were willing to, you know, pay for that. Or, you know, like I went to Jordan's Crossing Ministries in Oroville, and you work for your rent there. You know, you work for your rent and then you get a job and you pay your rent. And then I went to the missions program, and that was all by grants and stuff. I didn't have to work or anything, didn't have to pay rent. I think that maybe after you're there long enough, you do. And then I went to the Salvation Army. And you work a regular 7-to-3 schedule, full time, all day, sometimes on weekends, and you are really paying your way to be there. You know, and I wish that there was more programs like that instead of the ones that cost thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. Because it's unrealistic and it's not going to really help a lot of people in our justice system. And mm-hmm. so I do really wish that we had a lot more options. And I think that that would help a lot of people.
And Robert, your response to that question?
I think from our standpoint, we think it's important that we work with community partners like SEJC, you know, the Alliance for Higher Education in Prison. And we believe that kind of our role is to provide that recidivism reduction to take the stress off of the system, which will allow flexibility and, you know, evaluation, you know, so that it's not so overwhelmed that we can't make change because there's just no room to do so, because it's just so stretched so thin. So from that standpoint, you know, we see that as kind of our role. The other thing I would continue to encourage is, you know, investment in mental health, addiction recovery, adverse childhood experiences, all those sorts of things are investments that can reduce the need for the criminal justice system to exist. It'll reduce that strain. So, I mean, it's just kind of a matter of where our priorities as a society lie. You know, are we going to invest in A or are we going to invest in B? You know, and so I do think we've seen that pendulum start to swing. I think the state has invested a ton of money into this in terms of the Rise of Scholars program and Project Rebound at the CSU level. You're seeing that, but they're supporting programs like this. I think you see a great deal of grants at the national level, everything from the Zuckerberg Foundation to the Lumina Foundation, are out there trying to invest in this, just because they realize that there has to be a different way, a better way, you know, doing what we've been doing. And I think the fact that as the data starts to come in and people realize that, hey, you know, education, not just in, you know, academics, but in trade and technical and things that people have a passion for, you know, will allow them, you know, to have that sense of independence and sense of confidence within the system. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. Well, and I've certainly heard you advocate for all of those things on behalf of students and folks who have had that experience as they transition back. And as we wrap up, often people will listen to conversations like this and want to be part of the solution. How can community members become involved in supporting the program or the students who are in?
I would just call Dana.
Call Dana. Dana, we're going to put the personal cell phone on the...
No.
That's reasonable, Robert.
I would say for anyone that has someone, whether it's justice impacted, meaning they have a relative or friend that has dealt with the carceral system in terms of everything from getting a summons to appear to, you know, spending time in state prison, or, you know, if they are personally on or have been on probation or parole or something like with court directed supervision, just to go to the shaftacollege.edu and just search for Step Up and fill out an interest form, and our amazing staff will take it from there. So that's that first step in, you know, moving on to that first class life I addressed earlier. So
helping connect people to the program. Anything else, Dana, that you want to add to that?
No, that's about it. And, you know, I think another thing is to be able to support, you know, people that are in this program is to be patient and be kind, be understanding, and like give them encouragement, you know, and understand that this is new for them. And the best thing is like some sort of emotional support. Be there for them. Let them count on you. You know, it doesn't take much.
Well, thank you both so much. I'll be putting some of the links that you mentioned in the show notes. And I really appreciate your time. You've been listening to Bending the Arc on KKRN Community Supported Radio. Please feel free to go to kkrn.org, support us, and we'll show you all the many ways that you can support the Step Up program as well. Thank you. I hope that you enjoyed this conversation with Robert and Dana. It was wonderful to be with them and to hear their passion for the program. It reminded me of another episode that you can visit in the archive with the Day Reporting Center. And there we also had a program director as well as a graduate, both sharing their perspectives on the program, what works when one is involved in it, and the importance of support and guidance, seeing the best in people and connecting people with resources. There's another conversation in our archives with Chief Probation Officer Tracy Neal and Probation Officer Ebony Higgs. And they also talk about some of the aspects of restorative justice that aren't often discussed, the programs and support they have both at the juvenile division and some available at the in the adult division as well, to help people successfully transition. Navigating that change, it can be really difficult, but there are things we know that work. Proven activities and support and programs that can be lifted up, and things in the community that others can do to respond. There are also, and Robert mentioned them in our conversation today as well, collaboratives in our community in Shasta County and other communities where many perspectives come together to see how we can successfully serve people, helping them with needs both within the carceral system and as they transition out. One of those is the Communities Correction Partnership. Another is the Juvenile Justice Coordinating Council. They both have meetings that are open to the public, and so you're invited to come and learn, check out their agendas and see what they're discussing. And if you feel called to do so, to offer your talents and insights and perspectives to the work that's happening there. You can always join the Shasta Equal Justice Coalition or get on our mailing list. You can email us at steering@shastaequaljustice.org. And we can also connect you to many of our member organizations who are doing fabulous work in the community on all aspects of fair and equal justice.